Hello, it's Tuesday, 19th of October. I'm Gary Bauman. On today's show, I'm delighted to be joined by Simona Chimenti and Melina Caruso of the Bali Hotels Association to get their insider perspectives on Bali's reopening to international tourists. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today we take an up-close look at one of the longest-running reopening stories here in Southeast Asia, Bali. I'm pleased to be joined by Simona Chimenti, who is the Marketing and Media Relations Director for the Bali Hotels Association, and she's also the General Manager of the Pavilions Bali in Sanur, and Melina Caruso, who is the Technology and Marketing Consultant for the Bali Hotels Association. So firstly, welcome to the Southeast Asia Travel Show, Melina and Simona. How are you both doing, and how's beautiful Bali today?
Hi, Gary. Thank you very much for having us today. We're doing good. Bali is as beautiful and sunny as ever, very hot. I think we are closer to the sun than we have ever been, or at least that's what it feels like. We're definitely so ready to welcome back visitors to our beautiful island.
Thanks, Gary, for having us both. I don't think Bali's ever been more ready than now, ready to start on a brand new adventure, with the sunsets being even more awesome than they were before.
That's beautiful to hear. So whereabouts are you guys right now, and can you see the beach?
If we step outside, we could, and look down the road. We're in just outside of Sanur, actually.
Beautiful part of the world. So let's get started. We've got plenty to crack on with the next 30 minutes, but let's take a step back, Melina, because in June this year, you helped us to set up a joint podcast between the Bali Hotels Association and the Phuket Hotels Association, which featured Jean Elier and Brad Edmond. And to this day, that is our fifth most downloaded podcast since we actually launched in the beginning of 2020. But at that time, back in June, the media was closely comparing the potential reopenings of Phuket and Bali. But the two destinations have followed different paths in the meantime. So what have your members been focusing on in these subsequent months?
Okay, well, I'll start first, Simona. The similarities between the two destinations and both associations were really what drove me to want to have the meeting with Phuket. And our chairman, Jean, was actually super keen as well. What we've been focusing on is making sure that our members are kept informed of all the changes in the rules and regulations, making sure the properties are ready to rock and roll whenever we were thrown a date to reopen. Our vice chairwoman and government relations director, Francisca, I mean, she's had her work cut out for her. I do not envy her in any shape or form. She's well supported in the office by our executive director, Dia, and the rest of the team in sorting through all those regulations, because sometimes there's a little bit of a conflict between the circulars that are issued. But from a marketing point of view, we had, Simona and I often discuss the need to have plan A, plan B, plan C, you know, ready to fire whenever the situation perhaps changed or was required. I think I mentioned to you, I have a crystal ball and we pull it out every now and then. But, as girls, we're, you know, always ready to be prepared to tackle whatever was thrown at us. There were some delays in our tactics based on what was going on, but it was something that we had no control over. So we just were ready to strike whenever we needed to strike. Simona?
Yeah, I think that pretty much says it all. Now, obviously, looking at Phuket is quite normal, right? Bali and Phuket are sort of the prime comparisons or competitors in the Southeast Asian market. And of course, knowing that Phuket was a little bit ahead of Bali and had the whole sandbox program ready, that was interesting for us and our members to see what was happening and basically to use the business as a benchmark and a learning experience for us to know what was about to happen and what likely would be similar scenarios that we would be facing in Bali a few months down the road.
Right. And so also during that time, the Bali Hotels Association launched the Welcome Back to Bali website. So what was your planning there? What were your objectives and who are you targeting it at?
Well, the main objective was to actually have a one place where everything was available in English because there was a lack of information in English. But what actually, a one-stop shop for travellers and industry partners to find out what they needed about what was going on in Bali, if they were planning trips, and just how to navigate around those rules so that you were doing the right thing. I mean, we received an amazing amount of support from both the Minister of Tourism, the Vice Governor of Bali, the head of the Bali Tourism Office. As there isn't a commercial element to the site, it's purely based on information in a nice, clean and free environment. We wanted to make sure that if you were coming here, you knew exactly what you needed to have before you left your country, what you needed to do when you arrived, and what your obligations were under the health protocols. In all the years that I've worked with Bali Hotels Association, and that's a lot of years, Gary, the association's always been committed to promoting Bali as a beautiful and quality destination to the world. And this year, we have focused our efforts on continuing to support the island's tourism recovery. And this was just a tool to help us do that.
Yeah, so we'll put a link up on the show notes because it is a valuable tool. So just talking about the Bali Hotels Association briefly for a second, how many hotel members do you currently have? Are they all open? And what kind of occupancy rates are they recording?
So at the moment, Gary, we have 126 hotel and resort members. Of course, during the pandemic, we've lost a few members along the way due to the economic situation. In terms of opening and closure, it depends a bit on the property, the type of business they cater for, and their location. The majority are currently open and operating, and obviously based on domestic business at this time. But since the emergency restrictions have eased up and domestic travel has been opened up again, some of the properties have been actually doing quite well, reaching up to 50% occupancy.
Right. So that's an important part of the discussion, really. We're talking about the reopening to international tourists, but domestic travel is so important to Bali. How has sort of domestic travel demand held up in recent months?
I think that it's since the lowering of the community activity restrictions, or the PPKM, as they call it, from level 4 to level 3, and the reduced cost of the PCR and antigen testing, a lot more people decided to travel to Bali. Obviously, our vaccination rates in the big cities, as well as Bali, are quite good. So I think that there was, you know, people felt a little bit more comfortable about traveling here.
Right. So let's talk then about the international scenario, because Bali was scheduled and officially did reopen on the 14th of October to international travelers from 19 countries. But as of, I think, today, there are no inbound flight slots filled. From the outside, it looks a little bit confusing. So what's the current situation there on the ground in Bali?
I think, yeah, it does look a little bit confusing. But the way I think we have to look at it is, like, this is a necessary, basically, a first step towards reopening to international travelers. So it's a slow process, that's for sure. There is some light at the end of the tunnel. There is obviously quite a lot of rules and regulations that are still currently being defined. The situation is literally changing by the day. So there has been an announcement, obviously, that 19 countries are allowed to travel directly to Bali. It will take a little bit of time now until international flights are scheduled. So we have to see that the airlines will take a bit of time to adjust their schedules and occupy the slots. All the way along, the Ministry of Tourism has been very proactive in getting the message from the industry, representing basically the hotel and the travel industry, to the decision makers in Jakarta. And we as BHA have tried to support, of course, wherever we can, in bringing forward the message from our members and supporting in terms of what programs were available for travelers during this time.
So we'll come back to that list of 19 countries in a moment, because it is pretty interesting. But I wanted to talk to you, it's a difficult scenario. We were talking off air just before we came onto the podcast. And many countries across the region are struggling to reopen, simply because there are so many stakeholders, there's so much government involvement in reopening, because it's been so long. You know, it's almost 2 years for many countries now. But what would you say are the particular challenges that Bali is facing right now in its reopening?
I guess if we're going to be completely transparent and honest, I think that some of the regulations are an obstacle, but they are obviously, there needs to be some kind of measuring stick, I guess, you know, that applies to vaccinated travellers and countries that are allowed to travel here. But my biggest concern, I think, right now is the fact that we're basing the countries on the case per 100,000 that the WHO have put in place. And, I mean, that didn't work too well for the UK when they started, because things could change after you've booked. And I see that could be a concern, and maybe the airlines are feeling a little bit nervous about that as well, and what it means to them from a commercial point of view. So I'm hoping that, you know, we'll sort of sort things out a little bit, and maybe if this pilot opening that we're going through in supposedly October and November actually opens up to some of those regulations being eased and it being a little bit more simple, because I think the simplicity is what we need.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Talking to travel industry professionals outside of the region and also travelers as well, when they look at Asia at the moment, there are two things that I think confuse them at the moment. One is there's this lack of freedom. So you're going to have to probably prepay for your trip. There's a lot of regulations and a lot of bureaucracy. But there's also this issue of reduced freedom through quarantine. Now, I know that Bali has actually reduced its quarantine, I think, from 8 days down to 5. But it's still there, and it's still a barrier to travel for people arriving. These are issues that we're struggling with across the region. Do you think that they are barriers for Bali welcoming back the kinds of numbers of people that it wants to?
I mean, for sure, right? Because we are all travelers to some extent. And I think when we put ourselves in the shoes of somebody who wants to come on a holiday, having to spend 5 days in quarantine, whether it's in a room or whether it's moving freely within a hotel property, it's a limitation that most travelers would rather avoid. So I think we have to look at the bigger picture. It is a gradual process, obviously, to reduce this kind of quarantine. But we have the competitive advantage that we are in a destination where 70% of the population is vaccinated. Every traveler who is looking forward coming to Bali has to be equally fully vaccinated. I think what we are aiming for is a complete relaxation of the quarantine and being able to come freely. With regard to the other restrictions, I don't think that the prepaying is really an obstacle, as generally, especially when we're talking about intercontinental travel, most customers I would not see that, I think, as a major obstacle.
And how are your members shaping up in terms of forward bookings? Now, we've had some projections made by politicians, but there are no flights at the moment. So obviously, without flights, it's quite difficult for travelers to actually have the certainty to make a booking. Are bookings coming through?
We did a survey of our members and we asked them that question straight out. What are you holding for November and what are you holding for December? November was, I think, 1% were holding over 1,000 rooms for November. And December, they've had lots of inquiries about stays, quarantine package stays, because that's what we were asking. And because this was targeting the international arrivals. And yeah, the demand is there, but it's there's just so much other things to consider. I mean, I'm trying to plan a trip back to Australia. I'm an Indonesian passport holder and it's a nightmare, Gary. I mean, despite Australia saying they've opened up to foreign travellers, you have to prove that you are an immediate relation to an Australian citizen or resident, which obviously I was born there and my mother's there. And but I mean, I have to go, I think it was, I worked out Denpasar, Jakarta, Singapore, Sydney, and then Sydney, Melbourne. Go. It almost goes in the too hard basket. I mean, I have a reason to go home to see my mum, who's, you know, in her late 80s. But if I was just a traveller, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I can wait.
An immense level of complexity right now and doesn't really seem to be getting sorted out. I spoke on the podcast yesterday to Dr. Jaeyon Choi in Seoul. We were talking about the outbound market from South Korea, which has been quite vibrant in recent months. South Koreans are traveling internationally. And she was looking ahead at the forward bookings for Christmas, New Year, and particularly for Lunar New Year. And she said that most of the bookings right now are being made for Europe because it's just simpler to travel there. You know, there are less restrictions. It's easier to get in. There's no bureaucracy. And you know what you're getting straight away.
Yeah, it's easy. It's, I mean, peace of mind, isn't it? You're going, finally able to travel and go on holidays. I mean, I'm almost needing a degree from NASA to try to get home to Melbourne, you know. I showed my husband, he's like, I'm not coming. I said, that's fine, I'll go. But, you know, Europe has made it easy. I said to Simona, you know, I want to go to Switzerland because I have a son there. And that's super easy. That's no quarantine when I get there, no PCR tests when I get there. It's much easier.
I mean, the pent-up demand is there for Bali, right? And depending on what kind of markets the different properties work, there is an enormous amount of interest. But there is also an attitude where a lot of travelers are kind of like sitting and waiting and seeing what is going to happen, because they have obviously seen from other destinations that the first step of opening is normally not the final regulation. Things will evolve, sometimes to the better, sometimes to the worse. So they want to be sure that they can spend their holidays in Bali. And obviously, when we're looking today, people are comparing internationally. And if another destination is making it easy, well, then people are likely to say, let me go where I'm sure that I will not have to deal with changing travel regulations once I'm abroad.
I mean, Bali is so ready. The hotels and the destination is so ready, you know, we couldn't be more ready. But I guess our wish is that we, you know, it would just be a lot simpler to be able to bring that demand to Bali without navigating, you know, all the regulations.
Yeah, I mean, that all those points you made there, and also, you know, you said that the hotels are ready, but hotels, as like airlines, tour operators, all travel businesses, they do require stability and a degree of certainty in order to be able to plan ahead, to plan their budgets, the staffing, services, investment, that kind of thing. So although the hotels are ready, I guess they're having to readjust all the time. You know, how are they planning ahead for the upcoming season?
Oh, I guess they're sort of adopting a let's wait and see day by day approach.
I think we've all put out our crystal balls. Budgeting ahead is always at best an educated guess, but it's obviously extremely complicated at this time. I think I speak for all my colleagues when I'm saying that we are reevaluating the situation basically on a monthly basis and just observing what the trends are. For Bali, obviously now the next big season is the Christmas New Year, and then it's generally a little bit quieter after that, and then there is the Chinese New Year period. So it's all a matter of how quickly now we are able to actually welcome the first international visitors, to see how long this recovery period will be and how, as we said, how quickly the regulations and the restrictions will ease up and make it simpler for travelers to come to Bali.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. Now, in an ordinary year, if we jump back to 2018 or 2019, you mentioned their Christmas and New Year. In those years, were the visitors to Bali, were they mostly long haul, or did you have a mixture of long haul and Asian travelers as well?
Yeah, it depends very much on the type of property and the destination on Bali itself, right? Because there's quite a colorful market mix throughout Bali. But yeah, generally, Christmas and New Year tends to be a travel period for a lot of nationalities. So there's obviously Europe, there is also US, Canada, and then there is the regional near Asia market as well, as it coincides with either the Christmas or the end of the year holidays for many. So it is a very busy time. And it's also a time where the domestic market travels. So it tends to be a rather short but very intense period. But obviously this year it's very much on hold until we know what is happening in terms of entry requirements and quarantine and visa regulations.
Okay, so before we delve too closely into the list that's there, 19 countries at the moment, we'll scrutinize that. But do you think that's a finite list, or do you think that will be expanded or even reduced in the coming weeks?
Both. It's going to change, Gary. It's definitely going to change. In the last 24 hours, there was an announcement that the 19 countries may very well change There's a possibility of 9 of them being dropped if there is not reciprocal arrangements with Indonesia. So, I mean, you're dealing with the WHO metrics, and now on top of that, reciprocal agreements. So your guess is as good as ours as to that it's going to be a moving target, Gary.
From that list of 19 countries, obviously the two biggest markets going back in time before the pandemic were Australia and China. Now, China is included on that list of 19 at the moment. Australia isn't. Probably both quite difficult destinations to predict whether they're going to be sending travelers anytime soon. Would it make sense for Australia to be included?
Absolutely, it would. But, I mean, people from Perth or WA can't travel. People from Queensland can't travel. People from Victoria can't travel. So they're struggling with their own issues over there. People from Sydney can, but they just can't come here because we're not letting them come here.
I mean, I think Australia has made it pretty clear that obviously they have been, throughout the whole pandemic, very conservative with their estimations of international travel, and based on what they currently have on their flight schedules for Qantas, I think the earliest they are considering Bali is starting from April. So I guess that has been very much taken on board when Australia was left out of the list of initial 19 countries.
I would think the similar thing would apply to China. It's looking pretty unlikely that they'll be traveling in the upcoming season, would you think? Or your hotel's planning on the fact that there may be Chinese travelers, charter travelers perhaps?
I think it really depends on what's going on in China too and what they're subjected to. I haven't seen any easing of restrictions in China for their people to travel. Unless that happens, you know, traditionally the Chinese travellers come here for, it's a short period of time. It's not a lengthy time. And if we're having to have them be in a hotel for 5 days, you know, that's looking like it won't be happening.
I think for many regional markets, the 5-day quarantine will not fit their average length of stay and their, let's say, regular travel pattern as such. And then obviously on top of this, there are the restrictions that they are facing in terms of outbound travel and quarantine upon return to their home destination.
Yeah, that's a very good point, which leads neatly into the next question. So the majority of the countries on that list are from European countries in the Middle East. I guess that simply reflects the timing and the current circumstances, would you say?
I would say so.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's based, the list was initially based on the WHO matrix and on percentage of cases versus population. So that's obviously just a reflection of where these countries are currently standing versus on the pandemic scale. And now their element of reciprocity is being added into it. So that's where obviously we'll see that list changing. And I'm sure we'll also on the positive side see more countries being added in the, let's say, in the medium term, the same that we have seen for other country travel restrictions that change on a regular basis, right? Like the UK with their traffic light system, for example.
Governments, they do have to act responsibly for their citizens, you know, when agreeing to allow them to travel to a destination. But I put it a little bit like what happened with the Bali bombings and the warnings that governments had out, you know, to say don't travel to Bali. While Bali was amazing and it was it's not safe, but it was, you know, as safe as it could be. Do you know what I mean? It was like, why are you guys missing out? Well, the governments were needing to put in some measures to protect their citizens, and I think the government in Indonesia is trying their best, but it is such a fluid situation that it would take an enormous amount of gumption to just say, throw open the doors to fully vaccinated travellers and say, you're all welcome.
Just going back to when Bali was talking about reopening earlier in the year, it was looking, I think, was it 3 specific green destinations? Has it changed that, or is it sticking to those destinations?
I think the green zone system that included Ubud, Nusa Dua and Sanur was designed for the initial opening scheduled for July, when we were not quite there yet with the vaccination quota. I think in the meantime, where the entire island has reached the 70% mark and still improving from there, I think that there is not much purpose left for these green zones, and they are not really contemplated any longer. The last announcement was that travelers, after they have completed their 5-day quarantine, will be able to travel around the island freely and visit areas outside of the designated green zones as well.
And I was going to mention that on the list of currently 19 countries, there isn't a single Southeast Asian country on that list. Again, I guess that just reflects the reality in the region right now. Also, you mentioned the reciprocity idea. But no, Malaysians are actually able to travel outbound now. You do have to do a 7-day quarantine when you come back. But Malaysia would make sense to be on that list if there is no quarantine when you arrive. But if there is a quarantine when you arrive, that actually would mean 5 days when you quarantine when you arrive, 7 when you come back. That's simply not possible. That's one of the issues that across the region we're going to have to face is how do you safely rely on testing and releasing? Because it doesn't really seem as though at the moment countries are prepared to take that risk.
Yeah, I did see something from the WHO early this morning in amongst some discussions we were having internally that WHO was actually advising that, you know, restrictions be eased for travellers who are fully vaccinated, including no quarantine and no PCR testing. So let's hope those that are reading the WHO guidelines in Indonesia see that one.
Yeah, I think it's the way forward, right? We've seen the same in other destinations as well, the likes of Maldives or Seychelles or Mauritius, where progressing forward, they have seen that the quarantine can be cancelled, right? As long as there is a proper testing system in place, as long as vaccination is complied with, there is no real need for quarantine. And I think that's the way we are going. The question is just how long is it going to take us to get there?
And I think also in relation to the vaccination, you know, we still don't have some way to validate the vaccination certificates on a global scale. I mean, it'd be amazing if everyone could have the IATA travel pass, for instance, you know, and the vaccinations that are on there are verified, and it would make life a lot easier. But it seems to be that even though the travel pass has a lot of merit, it's not widely adopted.
Say yet. Yet. Let's hope that we'll get there.
Everything ends in yet.
So we've looked at a lot of the complexities, and there are, and these aren't exclusive to Bali. There are a lot of complexities across the region. But looking ahead, let's try and look a bit more positively. Looking ahead to 2022, in the hope that travel will normalize to some degree, it's not going to go back to buy and fly that we used to have. We know that not yet. But if there is a recovery that could start to gain momentum next year, do you think in a year's time that we'll be talking about a bounce back in Bali?
Well, I very much hope so. I think we have to be realistic, like you mentioned. It's not going to go from 0 to 100. That's normal. And it will be a bit of a learning curve along the way. The profile of travelers may be different in the first few months as well. There may be different demographics traveling. So definitely there will be a bit of an evolution of Bali tourism in terms maybe also of source markets and the type of travelers. I think we hopefully should be back to a point in a year from now where we have a steady inflow of both international and domestic visitors. I don't think that we will be back to what we consider normal, right? If we set our standards back to pre-pandemic 2019, I don't think in a year's time we'll be quite there, but hopefully we'll be on the good way.
There is a definite love affair with Bali and people want to come back. Especially if they've been here before. So I think that our repeat business will definitely bounce back a lot quicker than perhaps maybe first-time travellers. But Bali always has a way to jump back and get back into the game. It's an amazing destination. The people are resilient. The industry is amazing. So we just have to maybe just keep the crystal ball and our fingers crossed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Resilience is certainly something that should be applied to Bali, and nobody should forget that. So let's look back a little bit. If we go back to 19 months ago when this all started, you know, what have you both learned about the industry, about hotels, about destination during this time? Has anything surprised you over recent months?
There's only two words that come to my mind, flexibility and agility. I think we've all learned a lot, right? I don't think any of us – tourism professionals would have ever expected, such a sudden and such an extended halt to travel. I think we all, to some extent, underestimated how long this would affect our industry. And that's where I said, basically, the need arose to rethink a little bit also our operations and how to remain afloat during this time. I think the third word that really mixes in there is the word we've just mentioned, it's resilience, right? It's how the Balinese and all of us local residents here have dealt with the situation and how to make the best out of it. Because ultimately, it is a bit of a waiting game. But a lot of people have been very creative in this time and have tried to find alternative sources of income and have developed small side businesses. So there has definitely been also some very positive stories and some very encouraging examples of how people have dealt with the situation. So I think that's the best we can take away from this extended pandemic time.
I think from my perspective, super, super proud of our members and our industry. You know, we continue to operate our programs under the correct protocols and regulations. So we continue to support our orphanages. We continued with our scholarship program. We just finished on our sustainability food festival, which was awesome. There have definitely been leaders in showing that you know, good soldiers march on.
Certainly would agree with that. I think it's fair to say that Bali and most countries in the region, we're at the beginning of a transition period. It is going to be tricky. There are definitely going to be bumps along the way. But let's hope, Melina and Simona, that we can talk again at the beginning of next year, maybe after Lunar New Year, and things will look a lot brighter than they do right now.
Thank you so much, Gary, for having us on here and your support of Bali Hotels Association. It's been really great in the way that we've all supported each other. You know, many hands make light work.
Yeah. Thank you for letting us share a little bit about the Bali perspective with your audience. And I think it's great to see how all tourism stakeholders are collaborating together and sharing basically knowledge and trying to find a way forward. So we can't wait to open up again to our international visitors.
I think also if there's one parting comment I can make, Gary, and that is if you're thinking about coming to Bali and you're from one of the 19 countries that are on the list, just hold off. Maybe you've waited this long, a couple more weeks are not going to make a difference. Things may very well change in your favour.
Great. So Simona and Melina, thanks so much for your insights. Thanks so much for updating us on the current situation. As I said, hopefully we can chat again early in the new year and things will be a lot brighter. So that brings us to the end of this special Bali edition of the show. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast and don't forget to send us your thoughts and your comments on what we discussed with Simona and Melina or anything that we missed out. Drop us a message on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or on Twitter at SEA Travel Show. And as always, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. So thanks again very much to Simona and to Melina. That's a wrap for today, but I look forward to talking more Southeast Asia travel and tourism with you again very soon.